This is All In. I'm Miriam Sob. Today, we're talking about the renewed interest in analog film photography. We're going to talk about why it might be growing in popularity and what it could mean for the medium during an age of digital technology. With us now are three guests, David Ondrick, artist and lecturer of photography at Indiana University's Ashkenazi School of Art, Architecture, and Design. Carol Golomboski, film photographer and professor of photography at the University of Colorado Denver, and Michael Kirchhoff, a commercial and fine art photographer and editor-in-chief for Analog Forever magazine. I want to welcome you all to the program. It's a pleasure to have you here. Really excited about our conversation today. I'll start with you, Michael. When did you start noticing the use of analog film start to slow down? Give you a second there to unmute. In the meantime, I'll direct that same question to Carol.
Hi there. Great to be here. Well, I've been teaching photography for a long time. I've been teaching at the University of Colorado Denver since 2002. And, you know, around that time, like around 2000 to 2010, digital photography was really kind of like sinking in. It was really sort of taking over what I saw, at least in, you know, sort of my teaching practice and kind of what I saw in just the sort of contemporary practice. So there was this real kind of slowdown for a while. And I think that those of us that really love analog, we're a little worried. We're a little worried for the people who manufacture our materials. We were really kind of worried about this practice that we love just sort of disappearing.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I definitely want to touch upon later, is just about the materials. David, what about you? When did you start to notice this decrease in analog and more from digital taking over?
I mean, really, it wasn't until the late aughts that digital cameras started to be plausibly as good as film cameras. And it seemed, I think it was around 2007 that Kodak posted the first significant financial disaster around that. I've been lucky enough to be teaching in environments though, that have had a dark room since 2004. And so I was a little bit insulated from that because I was still in my day job often teaching and using film and analog photography. I would say it was about 2014 that it really became clear that that's what the majority of programs were going to be. But interestingly enough, that's also when colleagues of mine started talking about how students were becoming way more interested in film cameras. Mm-hmm. So it's back and forth, it seems like.
Carol, what was it like when you started to see digital photography gaining more popularity in the public? You mentioned kind of being a little bit concerned about the manufacturers of the analog products, but did you feel excited at all? Were you more worried?
Oh, I think it was really exciting. I mean, I think that all of the new technology offered a lot of really great possibilities for people. You know, I mean, I have colleagues and friends who were just thrilled to never have to go into a dark room again, who just totally embraced it and loved it. And, you know, I think for a lot of folks, maybe most folks, it's more practical. You know, I mean, there's a lot of really great reasons to be embracing digital technology when it comes to photography. I think for me, just because I loved the experience of working with film and being in the darkroom, like I loved that kind of physicality, like sort of getting my hands in it, you know. So I was, you know, concerned. I remember around 2000, someone telling me that by 2010, all analog photography would be gone. So I'm really kind of glad that here in 2022, we're having this conversation.
Yeah, I'm just thinking even of Polaroid cameras making a resurgence. I remember those as a kid, seeing those, and it's like now it's the cool thing to have.
Yeah, that's so true. So true.
Michael, I'm going to bring it back to you. What are your thoughts, you know, as analog film started getting slowing down maybe a little bit and digital started to take over? What were your thoughts during that time? And when did you start noticing the change?
Oh, wow. When did I start noticing it? Well, I mean, I was kind of, I've always been shooting film. I started out with that way, and there was no digital. But when it started to show up. I was kind of an early adopter of it, but no, I didn't kind of jump in with both feet. But as far back as 1996, I was doing some digital work. So that's kind of when, for me, it started. And it really took over, I would say, probably by 2004, 2005. But for me, film had never really gone away. And as I continued to make my own art, that's simply what I used, because for better or worse, that was what I knew how to do and how to do it, and it was working for me. So there was no reason to make any kind of change. You know, there was no need for me to figure out some way to use digital to make my art. And now I think that maybe people who are into like photojournalism or documentary photography probably have it the hardest in terms of making their work with film, because digital is still kind of supreme in those areas.
Mm-hmm. And do you think smartphones or, you know, the use of cell phones with cameras and that, did that speed up the technology?
It certainly did. And from my perspective, especially when Instagram came along, because of the success of that, probably hundreds of other phone apps showed up, and a lot of them were very specific in terms of, like, you know, what they would always call a filter. But for me, all of those filters were all based upon, you know, what we did with film, whether it was simply a warming filter shooting film or like something similar to shooting with wet plate collodion and applying that to your digital image to make it look like it was shot that way. But that's what kind of signaled a lot of the new photographers that there was something different and new to them.
David, when we talk about analog film photography and dark rooms and manufacturers of the supplies that are needed, were those impacted by the growth of digital photography? And was it necessarily a negative thing, or was there some positive to it?
Well, my experience with that is that there was definitely an impact. The range of products shrunk dramatically. It comes and goes. Every once in a while, someone will re-release a product that had been pulled. But also what survived is really good. So it's not necessarily a problem as far as that goes. And sort of to what Carol was speaking about earlier, I think I've heard that film and darkroom photography will be dead within 5 years for the last 25 years. So it's great that it keeps holding on. And, you know, there's even been a resurgence of 19th century processes because digital cameras are now at the point where you can actually print through an inkjet a very large negative, which is what those processes need. So it's really just a very amazing time in terms of material availability and the intersection of 150-year-old technologies and brand new smartphones.
Yeah, I think that's cool to be able to take old photos or things and revive them with the technology. But when it comes to just the process of doing things in analog style, Carol, working in dark rooms for your career as a photographer, when you see these dark rooms and labs closing their doors, when you hear things like in 5 years, this is going to be dead, what do you feel?
Well, I was concerned about it. I mean, you know, working in a academic environment, there was always sort of talk by administrators throughout the years of like, oh, we could, you know, convert this space where our color processor is into something else, you know. So I fought really hard in my own department to keep all of our wet labs, because I kept arguing, well, we could convert a classroom into a digital lab. But once those wet labs go away, I was pretty sure we wouldn't be able to get them back. So you know, I really kind of dug in there and fought to keep those in the space. And I think it's paid off, because we've seen now, like in the past, I'd say especially like the past about 8 years or so, renewed interest among students and young people. You know, I think because, you know, we all have phones, we all take pictures with our phones. So everybody is a digital photographer in a way. And I think that young people who are interested in photography see analog and film photography as something that not everybody can do anymore. So I think there's a new interest there, and I'm glad to see it kind of come around again.
My only experience with a darkroom in my college years taking photojournalism was it was the mix of analog and digital, where you would go and develop the negatives, but then you'd put them in a slide that would be connected to the computer, and then you would see them online. So it was I guess a hybrid of what was to come. But on that note, I do want to take a quick break and come back and discuss more of this with all of our guests today. We are talking about the growing popularity and interest in older photography technologies like analog film. If you're listening and you have a question or a comment for our guests, please let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We're talking about the growing interest and popularity of film photography in the age of digital media. And with us are three guests: David Ondrick, artist and lecturer of photography at Indiana University's Eskenazi School of Art, Architecture, and Design; Carol Golombowski, film photographer, professor of photography at the University of Colorado Denver; and Michael Kirchhoff, a commercial and fine art photographer and editor-in-chief for Analog Forever magazine. Before the break, I kind of touched upon sort of this hybrid digital-analog situation that I experienced as things were kind of changing when I was a student. Was that a sign of things to come, Michael?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think you can't stop progress. So one, now that digital is here to stay, I think a mixing of the two was certainly inevitable. And like David had mentioned, the ability to make a digital negative of practically any size really that brought a lot of the historical processes to the forefront, where people were able to, they require a very large negative because they are contact prints. And before digital negatives, you had to, if you wanted to make an 8x10 print, you had to have an 8x10 camera. If you wanted to make an 11x14 print, you had to have an 11x14 camera. So the ability to do that was, it was much more difficult. And required, obviously a much bigger dark room, as well as the camera. So being able to print out a negative in your office or studio, and then take that and make a contact print of the same size, I think it just piqued everybody's interest that much more. And, that's when we really started to see a lot more, things like workshops kind of show up and introduce a lot of these processes to people who were becoming more and more interested in.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a listener question from Jesse on Facebook who asks, I was wondering if anyone had compared digital photography and analog in terms of their environmental impact. Is one better than the other for our planet? Also, are the developing chemicals hazardous? David, would you like to answer that?
It's kind of tough to answer. The chemicals aren't great. One, in fact, does become toxic because it becomes saturated with liquid silver. But also, the manufacture of electronic components is not great either. What do you do with that? it's hard to say. I don't think it's high up on the list, though. Like, there's so much worse stuff going on that I have not personally been that worried about the environmental impacts of either.
I wonder, though, if in the past when everyone was using film and getting it developed and, you have to keep buying film to put in your camera, if digital kind of, I guess, took down some of that possible environmental impact.
Sure. I mean, within the history of photography, I'm sure people were just dumping chemicals that they shouldn't have down the drain and out the back window and things like that. There's artists who've done work about this with cell phones getting replaced every 2 years. However, like a film camera, we use 40, 50-year-old film cameras, and they're still fine. So
even if the individual analog process might be more impactful than, it's like the quickly replaced nature of a lot of this technology, especially in the early days when megapixel counts would jump every year and people would throw out their old camera. Like, that's probably worse, but I don't have definitive numbers on that.
That's a good point. I think we forget that every time we have to upgrade our cell phone and the camera in there, it's like you're getting a brand new thing from the beginning. And where does the old one go? Well, Carol, I wanted to ask you about the interest that you have in film photography. Where did it start? Where did it come from?
Well, you know, I think like Michael was saying, when I learned photography, like, it was like the only way, you know, so that's what I was learning. And, you know, there was, you know, I think that there was like the very, very first version of Photoshop had just come out, and there was one class that I could take when I was an undergrad. But, you know, everybody was still just totally using film and working in the darkroom at that time. So, you know, I think I just kind of sort of fell in love with the experience from the start. Like, I always liked making work in the darkroom. I always liked being able to kind of close myself off, and just sort of the environment was always just kind of magic to me. So I think because that experience, when I'm making work, is really important to my, part of my process. And I prefer that to sitting on a computer. I wanted to stick with it, you know? So over the years, I just kind of figured I'll just keep doing it until, you know, I can't do it anymore. And again, it's, you know, we're largely sort of dependent on a lot of the manufacturers continuing to make the products that we like to use. But, you know, I just take it bit by bit, you know, year by year. And as long as the products are still out there, I'm going to still keep working in my space.
Michael, what about you? How did you get involved in photography?
Well, photography for me was something that was introduced to me by my father as a child. I had a very, very early, what we call now point-and-shoot camera. It was a Brownie-style camera that took a 1/26 format plastic cartridge. You didn't actually even have to wind the film into the camera. You just dropped it into the back and started shooting. But a few years after that, it was when the Polaroid SX-70 camera had showed up, the folding one that had the brown leatherette on it that is pretty much an iconic camera now. I became fascinated with it because you could take a picture and watch it develop before your eyes. So there was, you know, that magical element that you get from shooting film. And for Polaroid, it was, you know, that upped the game that much more. You know, you didn't have to wait a few days after you dropped off your film at the photo mat hut in the parking lot of the grocery store you went to. Now you could get a photograph in a minute. And it was, you know, it was like kind of what digital became, you know, it was immediate gratification. So that just, you know, spearheaded me into the photographic arts. I there was no looking back after that. The type of photography is a very tactile and visceral experience. And it really speaks to, I think it speaks to how humans operate and work. That really makes the experience that much better. You know, there's nothing wrong with digital per se, but when you dive into the analog processes, there's kind of an emotional response that happens.
I miss the days of analog photography. I think there's just something magical about taking a picture and waiting and then going to see it get developed. I mean, yes, if you had bad pictures and you're like, oh no, I took like 5 pictures of my foot by accident, that would be kind of annoying. But in general, it was just, there was a thrill to it. David, what was your experience like getting into photography?
It was pretty much the same. My father had a Canon A1 35mm fully manual camera. And at some point in high school, I took it from him and wouldn't give it back. And, a photo teacher
at that school offered to show me how to develop film and never looked back. Like Carol, the dark room, the meditative space, the hands-on process, that's all what excited me. Working in Photoshop, which I do, but it often feels like an office job, whereas being in the dark room feels more like artistic production. So I've kept consistent with it for the last 30 years.
Well, speaking of sort of the darkroom experience, we have a comment from Diana on Facebook who says, I built my home in 1989 with a darkroom, but I just gave away my equipment because it's so hard to find the needed supplies. Gone digital. So is that a sign of the times that, you know, someone who dedicated a space in their house to a darkroom has now gone digital? Carol?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely a sign of the times. I mean, I think that this has been going on for a while. I go to a lot of estate sales to buy props for my photographs. And it's not unusual. It's like that I will find there will be some little space in a basement where I, you know, someone clearly had a little darkroom space at one point. It seems like it was more common for amateur photographers to have, you know, something set up in their house at one point in time. And then everybody just, you know, started looking at the technology, and a lot of folks just decided that there was good reasons to go digital and get rid of that tech or get rid of those the equipment that you might need for a darkroom. So you see some of that around. You know, I oftentimes have students who are looking to pick some of that stuff up. So there's kind of this exchange happening, I think, where some people are getting rid of it and then other people are looking for it.
When it comes to young folks and students, I still think of myself as a young person. So when I refer to young folks, I'm like, is there really anybody younger than me? But anyway, when it comes to their interest and their passion now for this analog, either look or feel, or even actually trying to learn how to develop film, David, why do you think there's this resurgence right now?
It's hard for me to totally answer that. I was hoping to talk to some students to hear directly from them. But I think it's connected to the resurgence of, say, vinyl records, that there's something about the inefficiency and the hands-on and the magic of chemistry and light that is just satisfying an itch, that the instant gratification and efficiency and sort of that side of digital photography isn't satisfying for a group of people. So, like, I mean, I live in a college town, and there's 4 vinyl record stores that manage to operate. And yet I'm still sure that most people in town are listening to Spotify, but there's enough that are interested in that old-fashioned or cumbersome or big album artwork or whatever makes it work. That is the same sort of thing, the surprise of seeing something come up in the developer, the let's not know for a whole roll of film that you're taking until you actually do get to process it and see what's on there, or even just the sort of standing over it, waving your hands to dodge and burn as a physical activity instead of using a mouse to do that in Photoshop. Like
that's really interesting. I didn't even think that there were techniques like that. I guess I'm just so used to the Photoshop elements or things where you can just change things around. Michael, do you think there's a lot of pressure on artists right now to use modern technology to create their art to get it to stand out and get more attention? Or is old technology now making a comeback for them?
I think it's a little bit of both. There's certainly recent developments in the technology, more so from the computer end. The speed and efficiency that computers can operate now mean that using Photoshop to composite a photograph together, like you might see for, you know, a superhero film on a billboard, those are done by very high-end retouchers and compositors. And a few years ago, you could do it, but it was much more difficult and time-consuming, and now it's become a very efficient process. But by the same token, you can get, you know, I think it's just, it really depends upon your passion level for what it is you're looking to do. you know, the digital is still what everybody, not everybody, but most people will talk about. But when you start to talk about the analog methods, people can become much more passionate about it. And I think that passion level is what's driving this resurgence. You know, like you mentioned, some of the chemistry and the papers and the films especially just continue to disappear over time. The problem is they wouldn't disappear if more people used them. So we kind of have nobody to blame but ourselves. So if you really like a film, then shoot as much of it as possible, because you might not be able to get it again tomorrow. But you also see people stocking up on certain film stocks because they know that some sort of an announcement is made. And I've done this in the past where, you know, when the Polaroid Corporation first declared bankruptcy and they started, well, I don't know, I guess they did declare bankruptcy, but they started phasing out different films. When those announcements were made, you know, I immediately got in my car, drove to the local photo store and bought as much of that as possible and stored it in my refrigerator. Much to the dismay of my better half, but and I'm still using it. So even though it's expired, I'm still using it because I, you know, the films disappear, but people will always find a way to do something. You can take it down to a chemical level and make your own emulsion now. So the technology and the information is out there to do that.
So I just want to make note of the keeping film in the refrigerator. Is that a life hack that we should be aware of?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It happens all of the time. And I see it, you know, because I run a magazine, we have, you know, all of our, you know, social media outlets for it. And as soon as there's some film that's going to be discontinued by, like, the Fuji Corporation, somebody will make a comment on social media and dozens of people will suddenly show up and cry foul that this film is going away. And, you know, A, they'll complain how much it costs, but then they'll follow that up with, I'm going to go buy as much of it as possible and store it, because you can, you know, store it for quite a long period of time. And even after it's expired, there's, you know, it's used, you can, you know, store it for quite a long period of time. And even after it's expired, that are coming up in the expired films. And I'm certainly one of those people as well. Like I mentioned that I use old Polaroid film. Well, it doesn't really operate the way it's supposed to anymore. So there's inherent flaws in the process, but that's my process. So it completely works for me. And it's part of the intention behind making the work. So I think it's about deciding what it is that you want to do with your photography and then finding the methods and the tools to make that happen.
Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with photographers about the renewed interest in analog film photography. And if you're confused about what analog film photography is, maybe you remember the old disposable cameras or just cameras where you put film in. So we're talking about that. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. We're discussing the renewed interest in analog film photography in the age of digital media with three guests, David Ondrick, artist and lecturer of photography at Indiana University's Eskenazi School of Art, Architecture, and Design, Carol Golombowski, film photographer and professor of photography at the University of Colorado, Denver, and Michael Kirchhoff, commercial and fine art photographer and editor-in-chief for Analog Forever magazine. We have been talking sort of about this resurgence and interest in some folks who want to go back to analog or want to learn more about analog. I'm curious, Carol, with the instruction that you give to your students, do they ever have to learn about analog? Is that all they do, or is it more a digital world?
So in our curriculum, students have to learn both. I mean, they absolutely, you know, if they're a photography major, they need to know how to work digitally. I mean, that's probably the way that they're going to operate once they graduate. But our curriculum is also filled with analog courses, darkroom courses that they're required to take as a student. And, you know, I think that having that experience with those materials changes the way they think and respond when they are using, when they're shooting with film. There's a consequence, right? They have to buy the film, they have to develop the film, they have to wait. There's, it's really the opposite of instant gratification. So they have to kind of reprogram the way that they are shooting to kind of accommodate for those factors. And I think it's an important part of the learning process. I mean, we have a, we require a color photography course where students are shooting with color film and using this big giant color processor that we have in our lab to make kind of old fashioned color C prints. And, you know, one of the main reasons we keep it in the curriculum is that when they have to go through the process of making one of those color prints, which is sort of time intensive and labor intensive, they really look at the color. They really, really learn color, and they examine it in a way that I think helps them when they're working digitally later on. They kind of know what they're looking for when they're using all of the different sliding scales that are, you know, possible for editing when you're working in Photoshop, for example.
And David, are you the same? Do you have to have your students do both?
We do. There's a pretty heavy emphasis in the intro classes on digital, but those classes all start in the darkroom making photograms and pinhole cameras. And we do a little bit of color film in our intermediate color class. We got rid of the analog color print processor quite a while ago, so everything ends up scanned and printed. But we, similar to what Carol was saying, we find that as a tool of learning, the analog is really great. It's less forgiving on exposures. You have to take your time. You know, you can't just take 1,000 photos and by the laws of averages get one that's worth printing. You have to, you know, consider your subject, make informed decisions, really pay attention to your camera settings, that sort of thing. So it is a great learning tool. Like, it's critical thinking and creative problem solving. So.
Yeah, and it's definitely, I think, a lot more creative in the sense that you have to really think before you take a picture. There's no instant gratification, which I think, you know, sometimes it's a hindrance because, like you said, you could take a bunch of photos and then find the perfect one versus really taking your time and taking that perfect one maybe in your first or second shot. Michael, I do want to talk about the magazine you have, Analog Forever magazine. It sounds like you want analog to be forever. Can you tell us a little bit about the magazine and why you started it?
Oh, certainly. Well, yes, I do want analog to be forever. And honestly, I think it should cross into other avenues as well, like the music industry. I think when the process of creating your art, whatever that is, came about, I think it was done right the first time. And like I mentioned before, progress doesn't stop. So there's always going to be different ways to go about it and, you know, quote unquote improvements along the way. So it just basically introduces tools, new tools over time. So when we started the magazine, it was started by myself and a partner named Michael Bielan, and we basically bonded over the use of instant film, originally Polaroid, and then Fujifilm had an instant film. It's gone now as well. And then what became the Impossible Project, and then later Polaroid again. So those things create a community. You know, that's something that I think needs to be stressed. Like, this whole analog resurgence is more than that. It's a community, and it's based upon people's interest and passion for creating something visceral that started a long time ago. And it's wildly interesting, a lot of fun, and used by starting the magazine, we're basically just kind of spelling out what you can do with it. I mean, we spend less time. There's no tutorials. There's no, you know, camera reviews of cameras that were made in the 50s or 60s. We touch upon those things, but for us, it's about the end result, the artwork that you can make with photography, because I think in seeing those images, that's what piques people's interest. And from there, it's quite easy to go someplace like YouTube. You know, you type the word darkroom into YouTube, you're going to come up with tens of thousands of links from people all over the world who are at different phases in their career of using these processes. So the magazine kind of culls a lot of the, what we kind of consider the best of the best, or the people that really present the work well or the process as well. So while it is, you know, process oriented, it's about the intention behind why it is that you're making the work this way as well. So the magazine, like I said, we are just presenting the information, and we're letting people discover more from that.
I want to talk about HBO's Euphoria. It was the entire second season, my understanding is, was shot on ektachrome film, a type of Kodak film that was discontinued in early 2012, I believe. What does it mean, Carol, to see large productions like Euphoria using film for their show?
I think it's really exciting and really interesting. I have recently been starting to do a little experimenting with Super 8 film. So I'm just a complete amateur at this. I'm just kind of learning it, but starting to kind of tap into not just the photography community, but also the film community. And as I said, I'm no expert, but the use of expired materials and, older, like vintage papers that were used in the darkroom. This is something that, I feel like I've been seeing artists in the past 10 years really understand the ways that they can use expired materials, and the fact that it's extending now into, you know, a program like this on HBO is just sort of fascinating. You know, I think that there's a, an aesthetic that you can get, a color palette that's a little different. Clearly they are going for a certain kind of look, that, and they're finding it in this expired film. So I think it's great that there's that potential and that we're seeing different people using it in different ways.
Michael, same question for you, sort of about this show Euphoria. Are you seeing more filmmakers introducing film into their projects?
Oh, certainly. It's a slow build, like all the rest of the analog methods. But filmmaking is certainly one of them. And I was recently introduced to those facts about Euphoria as well, but it immediately reminded me of the fact that there was a group of high level directors, motion picture directors. I know Quentin Tarantino was one. Christopher Nolan was another. They kind of made a bit of a pact with Kodak, where they said that as they continue to make films, they want to make them using film and not necessarily digital. I don't know that if that's really still going on, but this was probably a good, 6 or 7 years ago, maybe even longer. And they stuck to that as far as I can tell. But I can also cite a very recent example. I was on a photo shoot it was an advertising shoot for an upcoming television show or streaming show. I had to sign an NDA, so I can't give any kind of details about it. But while I was on that shoot, I heard this kind of whir of a shutter, and I turned around, and there was a woman standing there with a Nikon Super 8 film camera, photographing, little vignettes and little elements of what was going on. And throughout the course of the day, I noticed that became an element that they would always introduce into whatever was happening. So, and there was a lot of discussion behind it. So clearly it was an element that was going to be included in the end result of the show. And to me, that's just like a really wildly exciting aspect. And it was clearly a creative choice. So I think as more people become more and more interested in analog methods, they're going to find ways to introduce that into their projects, however they're created, whether it's, you know, entirely or just partially part of the project.
David, are there any parts of this analog film process that you think won't make as much of a comeback, even if film becomes more popular?
Well, the whole distribution model for cinema has moved to digital projectors and downloads. Even if they're shot on film, they'll eventually be digitized to be edited and distributed. So the experience of actually being in a theater that's running a film print will continue to be pretty rare and hopefully pretty special if it does exist. I'm assuming that would be something that would be more likely to happen in LA than, say, Bloomington, Indiana. But I don't know that for sure. I mean, even though I sort of roll my eyes at having heard that film is going to be dead in the next 5 years for the next 25 years, it's true. Like, eventually there just won't be the market forces to support it. And my understanding is actually that a lot of film stocks disappeared when Hollywood stopped using them. And so these directors that are using film again are getting Kodak, for example, to do limited runs of those films. But I guess if that stops, then those products will go away again. But I'm happy for now, and I think for the near future, it'll all be there for us, those of us who are enthusiastic about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll tell you, this has been eye-opening for me because ever since, you know, I migrated over to the smartphone and digital cameras, like the DSLRs and stuff, I kind of forgot that there was a world of film. Carol, what would your advice be to folks who are hearing this and are like, hey, I'd like to give film photography a try?
Well, I think I'd like to circle back around something that Michael said just about the community of analog photographers that are out there. I think, you know, sort of ironically, social media has really allowed people who are working in analog materials all over the world to connect. And it's great. You know, I mean, if you're someplace where there's not a lot of other analog photographers around, you can find that community and ask questions. I mean, there's tons of Facebook groups and forums, and, you know, you can find interesting inspiration online. So I think that that's a really wonderful thing that has developed, that, you know, you can find someone, you know, people in, you know, on the other side of the world who are interested in doing some of the same things that you are. I mean, I guess the other thing that I would say is that because there are people like, you know, we were talking before about, you know, someone who is getting rid of their darkroom equipment and deciding to completely go digital, because that's happening. I think there's a possibility if somebody's interested in pursuing darkroom photography for, you know, picking up equipment and in some cases being able to get it pretty cheaply. But I guess my first recommendation would be, you know, find your community and, you know, look around, see who has the same interests, and that's a way that you can really kind of get going.
Well, we're about to wrap up, but I have a final question here, Michael, about a minute here. Have you seen film growing outside of the U.S.? Is it just something here that's picking up?
Oh, definitely. It's a worldwide experience. We get submissions at the magazine from, I can't even tell you how many countries, dozens and dozens of countries, mostly Western and Eastern Europe, but certainly from Russia, from India, Indonesia, and there's some really interesting work out there that's being created. So, in fact, Carol and I even participated in the Helsinki Darkroom Festival. They had an online discussion about working in the darkroom and festivals and the analog experience as well. And that's something that's was recently started. So it's obviously continuing to grow in other countries around the world.
I want to thank you all for joining us this afternoon and taking time to discuss with us. David Ondrick is an artist and lecturer of photography at Indiana University's Eskenazi School of Art, Architecture, and Design. Carol Golombowski is a film photographer and professor of photography at the University of Colorado, Denver. And Michael Kirchhoff is a commercial and fine art photographer and editor-in-chief for Analog Forever magazine. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks so much for listening. This is All In.